Greetings and salutations, Darklings. We are Chell and Tori. Welcome to the inaugural episode of Vampires Ruined My Life. In this podcast, we'll be discussing vampire media like books and movies, breaking down common vampire tropes and character archetypes, discussing vampire folklore and legends from around the world, and anything else related to the fanged undead.
So to start, we're just going to talk about why we love vampires and how they've lured us in personally. So Chell, how did vampires lure you in?
I'm so glad you asked. I started off as a ghost obsessed girl because I've had experiences with the paranormal since in utero. My mother is what our fairy godmother Jillian Venters would call a goth at heart. Like, mom enjoys moody, atmospheric British period pieces, Edward Gorey, Dead Can Dance, et cetera, et cetera. So the paranormal was not that far out of reach for me. Vampires came on my radar first with Count Duckula. Like, I was really into that cartoon. And then The Lost Boys, which I saw when I was around 7 or 8, because it had my two childhood crushes in it, Corey Feldman and Kiefer Sutherland. The real catalyst came when I discovered My Friend the Vampire, or the Little Vampire book series by Angela Sommer Bodenberg. I read that when I was 11, and it was a huge turning point for me. I remember leaving my window open, hoping for a vampire to come and offer me immortality. And like, I woke up the next morning with mosquito bites on my neck, and I was like, oh man, this is it.
I did it.
And then like nothing happened and nobody came to claim me. And I was just like, oh, wow. It was very disappointing.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
I always thought that Anton or Tony in the English version was just like a fucking chump for not immediately shucking off his mortal burden to join Rudolph and Anna, the two vampire protagonists in those series. And so like a year after this interview, The Vampire, the film was released, and I begged my mom to take me to see it. Now, it wasn't as if she was opposed to me seeing certain rated R films. She took me to see The Crow out of like intense begging, and we like struck a bargain, and she didn't even realize like how violent or bad it got. So, you know, she was very naive. She was just like, all right. And she took it, and she was way more disturbed than I was with that film. But our lives were dramatically different in like the year from whence like The Crow came out and Interview with the Vampire came out. Like, she was freshly divorced and we were living with my grandma and my aunt. So she was just kind of under like this, like a ton of stress and rarely had free time. And I was a selfish kid who just could not see the bigger picture of why she was like really putting me off. It wasn't like she didn't trust me to see this film. It was that she literally had no time and very little money to take me to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
But so she challenged me to kind of buy some time for herself. As she said that if I read the book that Interview with the Vampire had been based on, I could see the movie.
Nice.
And that just,
bargain.
Yeah, it's a great bargain, right? And if that didn't light a fire under my ass, like, I was halfway through Queen of the Damned by the time I finally got taken to see Interview with the Vampire by family friends. And I was definitely like already like a book purist snob by then to like really be able to like enjoy it for the wonderland of camp that film actually is. But it didn't matter. I was hooked. I was already under the spell of the vampire from then on out. Nice. What about you, Tori? What is your sordid history with the allure of the vampires?
My sordid history with immortals. So I can't actually remember the first vampire thing I actually loved. I did love Count Duckula, the cartoon. I was into that. I know the Count was one of my favorite Muppets when I was a kid. I liked the idea of vampires. I must have like read other like vampire books for kids. I don't have a strong memory of that, but I knew I was already a vampire fan. Because when Interview with the Vampire came out as a movie, my mom actually bought the paperback at work because if she was like on a work break, she saw it. And so she started reading it. And I immediately was like, I need to read that book. And she's like, well, I'm going to read it first to make sure it's okay for you to read, you know, which she did because I was 12 years old at the time. And so I was allowed to read like Stephen King and Michael Crichton and stuff, but she just had to read it first. That was kind of the rule. And so she finished reading it and she figured, I guess, that everything that wasn't child appropriate would just go over my head, which it did, to be fair, super over my head. So that's fine. Rereading it in my 20s, I was like, whoa. But yeah, I was allowed to read it. And so I was super into it. And that book really sucked me in because it was so different. It wasn't just like a vampire in a castle killing people or travelers who wander by. It was like this reporter guy in San Francisco, where I had been many, many times. My family is from the Bay Area. I was born in the Bay Area. So San Francisco was like this real place that I could connect to. And this guy is just having this conversation with this vampire. And the vampire isn't like this monster. Louis is just like this guy who feels remorse for killing, and he hates what he is. And he talks about his life and during his life, all these other vampires who are like, chill out, man. Being a vampire is cool. What's your problem? And then at the end, the reporter's like, dude, are you kidding? You're telling me you're this immortal creature who has these sweet superpowers and you get to live forever, and that bums you out? What the heck? Like, come on. And so, and just by the way, Daniel Malloy, the reporter, is like, he might be my favorite book character ever, because I just relate to him on a deep and spiritual level. And his just whole, like, what is your problem kind of thing was just so amazing. And so that series really drew me in. And I actually, my mom, The Vampire Lestat is the book where my mom gave up the rule where she had to read stuff first, because she started to read it, was not into it for many reasons that became clear to me when I was older. And she just kind of handed it to me and was like, read what you want. And so then I read the whole series, and then Memnock the Devil came out in 1995, and everyone read it and threw it against the wall. But anyway, yeah, so that series really sucked me in, and there was just basically no going back. And that series also has the really cool unreliable narrator thing, which I think is one of my favorite fictional devices, is when you get a series that has different perspectives, and the next book is the other character, Lestat, going, hey, actually, he got some stuff wrong, and I'm going to correct things. And I really love that in series when it happens. So I think that's really cool. And yeah, after that, like, I would read other vampire books. I would watch vampire TV. I watched Forever Night all the time when it was on USA. And then Buffy came out when I was in high school, and I started watching Buffy. And so I'm 100% team vampire. So what is it that brought you over to team vampire, Chell?
Oh, immortality, 100%. I was born with a very complex heart defect. And by the time I was a preteen and fell ass over tits for vampires, I had already had 3 open heart surgeries and spent a good chunk of my life in and out of hospitals dealing with the side effects of my condition. Like, I've been in ambulances. I'd been medevaced by a helicopter like my own school in first grade.
Oh, wow. You
know, I was very hyper aware of my own limitations. So most kids in developed countries have a sense of immortality. Like, they think they're impervious to harm. And I knew from a young age that death was inevitable and could be imminent. Children were not safe from it. So the idea of immortality really appeals to me. And it still does, truth be told. If drinking blood is the trade-off, I really have no moral qualms about it. I'm a selfish coward, and I don't want to die. It's really simple as that. The romanticism, the poeticness, the sex appeal, I honestly could not give 2 shits about it. Just let me live forever. You know, when you have all that time, you can experience literally everything that life has to offer. Granted, obviously, within whatever your vampirism will allow you, you know, you can't,
right.
like if your vampirism is the kind where you will absolutely 100% burst into flames the second the sun touches your skin, obviously there are going to be some certain like sun related activities that you will not be able to enjoy anymore.
No. No, you're so, not going to be getting up for pretty sunsets. And
right.
And
you know,
stuff.
And yeah. Like, you're traveling, like one of the allures of being a vampire is that you get to travel anywhere and everywhere you want. But it does take a lot more planning and forethought than it would if you're a mortal person, you know, because you have to make sure that like all your connections are like done at night and that you are heading towards somewhere where it's going to be later and later in the evening or, you know, in the middle of the night, like when you land. So that way you have time to like go to your home or go, you know, go to a safe place.
Yeah. You can't just get to the airport when the sun's coming up because then you're really screwed. Yeah.
grab a taxi and then, and be like, floor it, you know, as you're like, as literal smoke and flames are like coming out of you.
You're just,
you know,
like stuck in the bathroom at the airport all day.
And, you know, I'm sure that has happened. Oh my God. That would be a, that would be a really funny like vampire thing of like trying to try, like trying to figure
trying
out
to travel and then you're just like stuck in the airport bathroom because you're like, I can't come out.
Or like jamming the lock for like a janitor's closet and just being in there like all day and just waiting till the sun goes down.
Yeah, you really.
I mean, because all airports have like those massive windows.
So yeah, exactly. So you're just like, you got to be somewhere safe because
you got to be really safe. You got to crawl up in the vents or something. But yeah, but like the actual appeal though of being able to just kind of like accumulate a ton of wealth, just, and it's not like, oh, I want to be wealthy for the sake of wealthy, like, you know, like our modern day billionaires are. I want to be wealthy so I can travel to places in like, you know, in comfort and stuff, and I can maybe, you know, be a bit of a Robin Hood too, like, you know, like tip the balance. Like that's what I would use my immortality for. Like I would want to, you know, I'd want to go after like the Jeff Bezos and the Zuckerbergs of the world. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like,
well, I mean, that's the thing. Like go after the villains, do some
go after the villains, evil. Right. Go after the villains of the world and like try and redistribute the wealth and, you know, yeah, tip the balance and stuff, you know, especially if you have like mind reading abilities like that, that makes it easier. If you don't, that makes it a little harder.
For sure.
Like you're going to be playing Dexter detective.
Oh yeah.
Like for a lot of your immortality life, trying to like chase down bad guys. But
I think what you're talking about too, is just like freedom, which is something I think about
freedom.
A lot.
Yeah. And like, I don't have a lot of it. I feel in my life. I'm disabled. So there's a lot of government restrictions when you're disabled, mm-hmm, both like financially and just like, you know, freedom life. So yeah, vampires really appeal to me because I feel like there is like this freedom in it that like, I don't know and can't experience. And that a lot of us just can't experience,
right,
because we're trapped in like a capitalistic cycle of having, yeah, to do things that
you got to pay rent. You have to pay rent, you know, like, yeah, you can't just go off and do whatever you want because you can't. Yeah. I mean, if honestly trading sunlight and having to drink blood to live forever and not maybe be able to acquire wealth in a way where I don't have to work all the time. Wouldn't hate it.
I mean, it sounds like with blood, like you get it's like, it's not like, oh, it's an acquired taste. No. You actually crave it, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's not like, I'm not Samuel Jackson's character Jules in Pulp Fiction, where he's like, a rat may taste like pumpkin pie, but I wouldn't know because I would never eat it. And I'm like, if a rat tasted like pumpkin pie, I would absolutely eat it. You know, like you develop the taste for what you're eating here. I'm not Louis, you know, I am not a Louis. I don't have those kinds of moral conundrums, but I also didn't grow up like severely Catholic either.
Right. Well, like I have this joke, and I've had this joke for years and years, but just this joke that like, if you're a vampire who is like opposed to like killing or drinking from people, just work in customer service for a while, like get a retail, yeah, job, be a waitress.
Absolutely.
You know, be a bartender, yeah, deal with customers for a while. Trust me, that will go away. And yeah, I say that and I would never actually hurt anybody, but like,
but you understand why you're like, yeah, oh, yeah,
I feel like if you're, you know, dealing with really awful people a lot, you would probably get over it pretty quick. You'd, yeah, find ways, or you could just do what Nick Knight does and just get blood from blood banks and put that in the fridge in bottles or something, you know? I mean, it depends, yeah, on what kind of vampire you are, but
yeah,
I'm sure there are ways to do it where you're not.
Yeah. Adam from Only Lovers Left Alive.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he does that.
Yeah, that's pretty.
Yeah, that's a great film. We'll definitely be talking about that one soon. So, what about you, Tori? What is it about vampires and vampirism that attracts you?
I mean, yeah, just like with you, it's immortality. Like, I also have chronic illness. I had a stroke at age 5 that left me with nerve damage on the left side of my face. I've always had asthma. So not having to deal with like physical limitations or illness is always super appealing. Like that's just would be a nice thing, you know? And, you know, also like a friend of mine died in a car accident when I was 8. And then my grandfather got leukemia when I was 9 or 10. So again, like just, you know, hyper aware of both my physical limitations of, you know, my fleshy mortal body and also just of death and loss. And so I think not having to worry about those things has always been an appealing thing for me. And I've always liked that idea. And I've always also liked the idea of having like superpowers or being like magically special in some way. I mean, I grew up wanting to be like a Ghostbuster or a Ninja Turtle or something. And I've always been drawn to this concept of kind of being outside the mundane world and existing on the fringes and having like superpowers or secret knowledge. And like, that's why the first few seasons of Buffy the Vampire Slayer are totally my jam, because it's about Buffy, who has this secret life as a vampire slayer, and she's dating a vampire, but she has to keep it secret from like most people in her life. And she still has to go to school, but like she has a secret life. I don't know. It just hits all my buttons. And I really like that idea of having like this secret identity or being part of something supernatural and magical. And that's always been really appealing to me. Plus, almost every vampire story I can think of, and it's not all of them, but it is very common that vampire stories tend to have like found family going on, whether it's the vampires or the people who are organizing against the vampires, whatever it is, like that's a huge thing. And found family is one of my favorite tropes. I eat that up. So that's another thing that really appeals to me.
Yeah. Same. Nom, nom, nom. Found family is actually one of my favorite tropes as well. And that leads me to something I've noticed with vampires is that queer people tend to be drawn to vampires, or at least vampire fandoms tend to be very full of folks from the LGBTQ plus community. Do you find that to be true as well, Tori?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like in my experience, queer people and other outsiders are often drawn to vampires because we can feel somewhat apart from our peers or from fellow humans. And so, especially when you're growing up, when you feel weird and isolated and like you don't fit in or you're not part of normal, quote unquote, society, it makes you grasp onto creatures who live on the fringes of society and can't totally assimilate either. And vampires are pale and undead. They need to drink blood. They're, quote unquote, monsters. And when you're a queer kid, you can feel maybe not monstrous, but you feel misunderstood. Or maybe like you don't even quite understand yourself or even know what you are entirely. It can take a lot of time to hash that out sometimes. Some people know all, you know, like really immediately. And some people like me maybe take a long time to kind of arrive at where they're at. So hopefully that's changing more and more for kids now. But I know when I was a teenager, and let's be honest, even now as an adult, I've sometimes struggled to figure out where I fit. And the idea of creatures who lived in the shadows and didn't have to integrate with regular people because they were different and they got to kind of stand apart was very appealing. And also, I just want to point out something that I've said a few times, just talking to other fans, but like in the really early books in the Vampire Chronicles, the vampires are sort of canonically asexual. Like their jam is just drinking blood, which, you know, I'm not saying they're not all super gay also, because they totally are, but I'm just saying. And I think as a young person who didn't really understand where I was, that was super appealing to me. And I didn't really figure out why for many, many years, because sometimes I'm dense as a brick, but that was definitely part of the appeal as well.
The outsider feeling and the fact that vampires tend to be indistinctive with their gender identity or sexual orientation or their victims. Biting and drinking blood is very intimate. And oftentimes vampires are depicted in art and other media as embracing their victims or attacking them at night while the victim is in bed, or even seducing them, like straight up seducing them for a sexual encounter before being turned into a vampire. Mm-hmm. So Anne Rice, I think, was likely the author to popularize and explicitly state that the act of drinking blood is a quote unquote pale shadow of orgasmic bliss. Using these examples, I would confidently state that vampires are inherently queer. Now, that is not to say that some do not have preferences or even go so far as acting upon real romantic feelings, such as Carmilla's towards Laura, the human protagonist. And also, it's really interesting what you brought up about asexuality and Anne Rice's vampires, because they actually stand out as being extraordinarily unique in the whole vampire pantheon, in that they are asexual and they're sexually fluid. Like, I would even dare say they are pansexual because they have no preference, but they're also asexual in the sense that they physically cannot have sex, like in the way that they could when they were humans.
Right. I mean, they can still be intimate, and you can write all the fanfic you want where they're doing anything you want them to do, and that I have no problem with that. But yeah, canon-wise, they definitely are
canon-wise, like, their bodies do not function the way that they did when they were human.
Right.
Now, she's never gone into it with women. I'm sure, obviously, maybe women can be the recipient of sex, like penetrative sex, but but they're not going to feel sexual arousal the same way that they would have when they were human.
Right.
Like, they only feel that way when they drink blood.
Yeah. It's bloodlust.
Yeah. It's bloodlust. Right. Exactly. And it's amplified. Like, that orgasmic bliss is amplified in the act of drinking blood. Hence the quote, the pale shadow that Louis states to Claudia when she asks about the act of making love. Because she knows that that's something she will, she can never experience.
Right.
So they're pretty unique, even though they're very sensual and sexual creatures of the mind. And they are the vampires that I feel the queer community first really latched onto.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that they are the ones that actually cannot physically have physical relations, like with either with each other or with, mortals. So that always struck me as very unique.
Yeah. And again, like, I think it was something that I don't know that I really necessarily understood why that appealed to me so much. But then I was like, now I'm like, oh, okay. No, I get it now. I get why that was like a thing. I was like, cool. I'm into this. Yeah. It's funny how, like, when you're younger and you read stuff and then, like, you read it later and you're like, oh, this, everything clicks eventually in some way. So almost every culture has vampires or vampire-like legends of undead creatures that feast on the living to sustain themselves. Why do you think that is?
I think vampires, or creatures and monsters we consider to categorize as vampiric, were created as a way to explain the unexplainable, which a lot of folklore boils down to anyway. Like, according to Dr. Emily Zarka of Monstrum, quote, vampires shift to reflect the culture and issues of its time, end quote. You have examples of human diseases that mirror certain traits of vampires, like sensitivity to light, or vampires being metaphors from topics such as death, forbidden sexual expression, alienation, rebellion, human-on-human violence, corruption, classism, and racism. The vampire embodies so many aspects related to the human condition. The word vampire did not appear in the English language until around the 1730s, but there were other forms and names for creatures that would evolve into what we currently call the vampire of the Western world. I do want to state that for clarification. We'll talk more about regional vampires all around the world with their proper names in lore and folklore in future episodes.
Yeah, we definitely will. And I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Like, the cultural significance of vampires has shifted a lot throughout time. And I do think part of it just comes from the fear of the unknown. Like, death has always been this great mystery and this sword of Damocles that's hanging over humanity. And before we really understood the science of death and illness and decomposition, like, we understood illness, but we just didn't understand like germs. So you would have these supernatural legends arise, or like accusations of witchcraft, or stories about creatures like vampires, because you have some stranger that comes into town, maybe carrying some disease or some germ, and suddenly people start falling ill or dropping dead. And if you don't know germs exist, you're going to think that stranger has some dark magic that he's like carrying from town to town. And so it creates these legends of these monsters that are maybe traveling along and leaving death in their wake. So other than immortality, what is the best vampire superpower? And what is the worst, or what is their worst weakness?
I'm a big fan of the shape-shifting vampire. Like, not every vampire has this power, and it is usually limited to certain creatures, often nocturnal, like wolves and bats. I also like mind control. I sure as shit mind control the hell out of all the capitalistic pig fucks in the world. I'd steal their billions and distribute it among the poor.
We could just start the leverage of vampires.
There you go. Oh my God, you will bring anything back to leverage, Tori.
So obsessed right now. So obsessed.
Yeah, Tori cannot stop talking about leverage.
Nope. Can't stop, won't stop.
Back to the vault with you, Vikra. You need a third podcast that is leverage.
I don't have enough to say about it. I just love it.
Yeah, it would just be you for an hour going, this is great.
This is great. Alec Hardison is amazing. He's such a fucking nerd. I love him. Elliot Spencer is great. Parker's amazing. I just love everyone. Anyway, it's okay.
I think the worst vampire weakness would be silver, which goes hand in hand with the lack of reflection, which I also am kind of not into. I believe because silver is used in mirror making. There's no consistent origin for silver being fatal to vampires. According to Dracula 2000, you know, that movie that everyone, of course, saw. It's because Judas Iscariot turned his homie Jesus in for 30 pieces of silver.
Yeah. And we all know Dracula 2000 is the consummate origin of much vampire lore.
I've also read that because silver is considered pure and incorruptible, like in a scientific form, it is therefore a natural repellent to impure creatures like the vampire.
Okay.
So really, there wasn't much association between silver and vampires until 1928, when rogue priest and self-styled vampire hunter Montague Summers penned his notoriously unreliable The Vampire, His Kith and Kin. I don't know. Huh. It's arbitrary and ridiculous to me. The reflection thing has no origin source either. Some can argue that mirrors were originally made with silver and that ties the two together. Others theorize that you cannot fool a mirror. And that kind of jives with me. Like, I like to think of a mirror as being a supernatural item in and of itself. And no matter what, you can't fool it.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
Yeah. That can at least tie in with vampires' ability to shapeshift, hypnotize, and deceive through visual tricks, fooling everyone but the mirror. The lack of soul in the reflection is completely bunk, because guess what? A toaster does not have a soul, and yet one can see its reflection. So unless that mirror, again, is magical and can detect souls, and if your vampire trope doesn't have souls, that's okay. You know, it has to, it's all to do with like consistency in the vampire lore itself. But as a general rule, I just, like, silver and reflections, I think they're just weak sauce. And my other vampire weak sauce is an inability to look at, touch, or otherwise fuck with Christian iconography. Like, unless your vampire is specifically a Judas vampire or biblical in origin, I just think it's weak sauce. Like, even Anne Rice rejected it, and her boys are the most devout bloodsuckers in lit.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea of being repelled by crosses or religious iconography is kind of silly. I get why it's part of the history of that, because it's kind of like, you know, your faith will protect you, but like not being able to enter a church or go on holy ground or even having to carry around a jar of dirt from your grave dirt always seemed kind of silly to me.
Plus that it really limits your vampire to Christianity, and there are so many other religions in the world. Like, you know, that to me it's an ostracizing way to other everybody else, and it's not mm-hmm. as welcoming. I mean, again, if your vampire has very specific origins, you know, post Christ, sure, go with that. I totally understand it. Like the way Francis Ford Coppola did Dracula. I understand that. That to me made sense, you know, like the way he interpreted it. And it was like a very clear form of rejection of God and a spit in his face, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. That I totally get. And I understand and I jive with it. Right. But like, if your vampires span the entire globe in the way that the Anne Rice vampires do, then it makes no sense, because their vampire origins go back, I think, 6,000 years? Question mark. It's
that sounds right. It's yeah, been a while since I've read those books.
Yeah, I mean, the origins are more like Vampire Lestat, and more specifically Queen of the Damned. But it's definitely in the BC era of human history.
Yeah, I think there's a vampire. I think it's in the Mortal Instruments series where, like, because he's Jewish, it's like the Star of David that he can't touch or something, which I thought was kind of a funny little like way to kind of turn that around.
Right.
And I do think that like the whole churches and holy ground thing, it makes sense in worlds where the protagonists are not vampires and need some way to escape from vampires. So like mm-hmm. in Vampire Academy, the Moroi vampires go to church all the time because they're not the evil undead vampires, but the evil undead vampires, the Strigoi, can't get into a church. And so that gives them somewhere to like run.
Oh, that makes sense.
To. For plot reasons, it's helpful. I can see why it's good like in your world for plot, but like, yeah, a lot of times you have to figure out why that is, because if you don't explain it and it's just like this random vampire is afraid of a cross, like it just doesn't make a lot of sense. You got to have a reason, I think.
Right, exactly. And you bring up an interesting point with like the Star of David. Okay, well, does that mean then that anyone of any faith then could use their iconography or their religious relics then to repel a vampire? You know, and is it any vampire? And what happens if you're an atheist? Are you just fucked? Or do you like this? Does like your inner heart have to like match the faith? You know what I mean? Like it brings up a lot of questions, and it's actually, it would be worth much more talented writer than myself to explore.
Yeah. I'm sure somebody has. I'm sure there's some book out there or some series where like that has been dealt with, but it's just an interesting thing. And yeah, I agree. It's kind of a weird weakness unless there's a reason for it in universe that we understand.
Right. So what about you, Tori? If you could pick any power, or like, do you have a favorite vampire power? And do you think any of their powers or weaknesses are trash?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think if I became a vampire and was allowed to pick a power, and in a lot of vampire worlds, it's kind of random, it seems like some vampires get certain powers, some vampires don't. And then there's ones where like everyone is uniform across the board. But if I could pick, it'd probably be the ability to like glamour or use really minor mind control. Like, I don't want to make anyone do anything crazy that they don't want to do, but I think like to be able to kind of Jedi mind trick a little bit, like I wasn't here, or unlock that door, you know, if you're trying to.
That's exactly what I was thinking. You just want to like be like, these are not the droids you were looking for.
Yeah, exactly. Just minor protection stuff for your own safety. And then also maybe to get access to things, like if you need them for whatever it is you're doing or working on, or I assume if you're a vampire, you're going to have a gaggle of people that you have joined with in a found family to meet some common goal. And so you need to have some little tricks up your sleeve to achieve those goals. So I think that would be a really helpful one. I feel like that's a useful power. And I also think like I've noticed in vampire fiction that vampires who can glamour tend to be really rare. So it'll be like this world of vampires, but like only one or two can like do this special thing.
Yeah.
Like in Buffy, it's Drusilla can do that, but it doesn't seem like any other vampire we meet really can. And I know like Adrian and Lyssa in Vampire Academy, like they both have the power of spirit. So like that's something they can do, is kind of mess with people's minds, which they're sort of figuring out during the series. But like that's super rare. So like most vampires don't have those powers. So I think it also is like, it makes you really useful. So if some of the vampires you're working with are kind of unscrupulous, you're not going to be as expendable as maybe some of the other ones. Cause like,
yeah,
they need you on the team, man. They need you on the team.
Isn't it pretty common though, that every vampire in the True Blood series, like they all have the ability to glamour, don't they?
I think so. I think, and like the reason why Suki Stackhouse is so special is because she can't be glamoured.
She can't be glamoured.
And she also can read minds. So that's.
And she can read minds. And right. And that's to do with her being like a half fairy or something like that.
Yeah, we learn later. It's because it takes like 7 books, I think, to get to half fairy.
I'm sorry. This is a spoilery podcast. Yeah. I'm going to spoil the hell out of
everything. I
have
read that whole series. I have only watched up to season 2 of True Blood because season 2 started focusing on the Maenad, and it got really into that, and I just lost interest. But I do want to go back and like watch the rest of the seasons, because like I don't know,
I only made it to like through season 4, and then I was like, this is now getting too ridiculous, and I need to turn this
noped
off.
Out,
and
yeah,
I noped out. But yeah, the glamour of the vampire, I feel it can kind of be a plot ruiner, you know, if it's done too gratuitously.
Yeah, and I think that's why in fiction it's so rare. It's like one of these powers that only a couple vampires have, and like even then it tends to be pretty limited, because again, if you just have a character who can just wave their hand and make someone do whatever they want, you're not gonna have a lot
story.
Of plot problems.
Yeah,
you're gonna have to work around that every time you're writing an episode or writing a book.
Yeah, I'm even pressed to think of who can do it in the Vampire Chronicles. Quite a few of them can.
Armand can
and Marius can, and since Marius is his maker, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And they never use it beyond, like, they could never control somebody like a zombie, you know what
no,
I'm saying?
No, it's
like,
very not, minor like, suggestions.
It's very minor suggestions and just like forget my face sort of stuff. It's not like life altering things.
No. And even in other stories, I feel like it usually tends to be like, even Drusilla can like distract people. Like that's how she kills Kendra. Again, this podcast is full of spoilers, but you know, she gets her kind of Kendra's another slayer who deserved better. And we're going to have a whole episode eventually. One of these days, it's just going to be like people from Buffy who deserve better. But anyway, we will get to
cast.
That later pretty much. Anyway. Yeah, it is kind of a rare power, and I think that's why, again, because you can't just have people throwing that around or all your plots go out the window, because everyone can just control someone and get things done. As far as weaknesses go, my least favorite one, or the one that I think would prove most annoying to me personally, is having to be invited in. Like, yeah. I think that's it's a vampire power that I noticed has fallen out of favor. Like, it's not, in most modern like vampire books, movie shows, it's not really one that seems to apply to those vampires. And I think it can be used really well in fiction. In Buffy, it's freaking hilarious. Like, there is nothing funnier than Angel trying to walk into a room and like stumbling backwards because he can't, because he hasn't been invited, or he's been uninvited. I don't know. I think they use that really well in that series. But as a vampire personally, I would be irritated, although it does seem to only apply to like private residences and stuff, so it's not going to stop you from going into the grocery store. It's not like you have to get the Walmart greeter to invite you in. It's just, I feel like it would be kind of irritating. So I feel like that's probably,
it's irritating for the vampire, but I have to say, as the reader / consumer of the media in question, I love it.
I mean, like, it's funny, and it's
funny as hell.
It can always be great. Like, we just watched The Lost Boys, which we're going to talk about. Like, it can be really, it can be played for laughs, and it can be a really funny thing. If I were a vampire personally, I think that's the one that would probably end up being the most frustrating.
And it's probably one of the tropes that is, I imagine, the most difficult, especially for writers, to ensure that they are consistently keeping up with.
Right. Well, and a lot of them now, and like this is how it is in Buffy, so I don't know if this is everywhere, but in a lot of the ones that do it, it's like you only have to be invited in once. And once you've been invited into a home, unless you've been uninvited through some magical wards or means, you have access to that home. So if you have a friend, you don't have to constantly be invited in.
Yeah. I know. I remember that happened. That actually does happen in True Blood. And I'm only talking about the TV show. I have no idea about the books, but Sookie uninvites Eric into her home. And I think he like starts bleeding profusely, like from all orifices. Yeah. Kind of like the way Ellie does in Let the Right One In. Like, I want to say that's kind of the same thing. Or yeah, like he's in like physical agony, if my memory serves, until he gets out of the house. So
yeah, I don't remember if that happens in the books. I do think she can uninvite people in the books. I don't remember how it affects them, though. It's been a while since I've read those as well.
But yeah, as a vampire, super annoying. So, Tori, is there any other reason why people as a whole or you personally find vampires appealing or fascinating that we haven't already touched on?
I think we've touched on most of it. Like, we talked about freedom. Most vampires in fiction tend to be rich because they like put $5 in a bank account in 1799 and now they have tons of money. Or they don't have to worry about it because they just like murder their landlord, which, look, I'm not pro murder. I'm just saying there are options available to vampires that are not available to us personally. So I think that kind of freedom where you're not worried about money and you're not worried about all this other stuff, like you can just kind of do what you want, write your own rules. That's pretty sweet. The other thing I think that I always found really appealing about vampires and still do is just kind of this ability to move somewhere and start over. And like when you live forever, you need to move around and start over because you can't stick around a place too long or people will start to get suspicious. So you have like a certain window of time you can hang out looking like you're 41 and then people are going to start questioning why you still look 41. So you got to move on. So if things suck, you know, just abandon your current life, fake your own death, move somewhere else, start all over. I do have to say, I don't understand why the Cullens in Twilight like start over by going to high school again and again. That seems super tedious. Maybe like go to a community college or something. I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with seeking some higher education.
Yeah, and staying like abreast of current events. Yeah. Like I get that. And I mean, I get the like the wanting to like be
in a community or connected.
Yeah, in a community. Yeah. And like they seem like they're very social vampires. So they, you know, they want to like make friends or at least like feel like they are one of the gang, you know, like I get that feeling, especially since they were turned when they were teenagers.
Sure. Yeah. But yeah,
but like actual school. I mean,
take a night class. That's fine.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, at least Armand took a night class. Like he just went to community college. Like Daniel signed them up and they just went.
Yeah. Well, they went to a lot of community college.
Like, they did.
Guy has more college credits than I do. And I went to college for like 8 years. So
yeah,
I went to real college and then I went to two different community colleges.
I only went to community college and I went for, till I was 25. So
I've been to community college a lot. So anyway, I'm a pro community college. I'm just saying, I don't understand, but I do love the idea of like just being able to start over and like move on. And then maybe because you're immortal, you'll connect with friends later because, you know, they're still hanging around somewhere and your paths will cross again. And I always thought that was pretty cool too. So, yeah.
So same. I love traveling and being a vampire. Like I can live anywhere and go anywhere either for free or on someone else's dime. As in, I stole that dime.
Right. Yeah. Just, you know, be gay, do crimes, be a vampire.
Exactly. Exactly.
There you go.
Maybe vampires didn't ruin my life. Oh, maybe they just.
Uh-oh. Maybe we're going to have to rethink this podcast.
It was capitalism all along.
It was capitalism all along. Capitalism ruined my life.
Oh. Well, that's not a fun podcast.
That's going to be the new title. It was capitalism all along. Just kidding. Vampires still ruin my life because I cannot be a vampire.
Yeah. And I can't pronounce sound St. Croix. St. Croix. St. Croix. St. Croix. St. Croix would save my life. I can't do it without second guessing myself.
So. La Croix.
St. Croix. Like La Croix.
Like La Croix.
So we have a vampire question of the week. This is our little spot where our listeners can ponder and then reach out to us on social media. What is it about vampires that lures you in? Share with us on Twitter or Instagram. Speaking of which, Tori, what is our Twitter and Instagram?
Our Instagram is at Vampires Ruined Podcast, and our Twitter is at Vampires Ruined. You can find us there and you can tell us what you find alluring about vampires or what you don't like about vampires and, you know, all that fun stuff.
Just talk vampires to us.
Yeah, honestly, either one of us is game for that pretty much all the time. That's part of why we started this podcast, because we were talking about it on Twitter after I said something about vampires in my other podcast. And I said that vampires have ruined my life. And then it's like, we need to start a podcast where we talk about it. And I was like, you know what? I'm down. Let's do it.
Yes.
So
Tori and I have been talking on and off about vampires for the last 20 years.
Probably 20 years. Yeah.
20 years. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have lots of fun stuff coming up this season. We're going to talk about some vampire movies. We're going to talk about some vampire books. We're going to talk about just vampire tropes in general and types of vampire stories. And it's going to be really fun. So I hope you'll stick around and come along for the ride.
So this is Tori and Chell wishing you a fantabulous evening with vampire wishes and batty nightmares.
Your hostesses through the everlasting darkness have been Tori and Chell, and this podcast was edited by Lazy End Productions.
Our music is mixed by Vic Raw, the Never Living, and includes Dark Halloween Night by Chase Allen Willis, and Toccata and Fugue in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach and performed by Kevin MacLeod.
Find us at anchor.com/vampiresruinedmylife or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Do you guys know how to say Judas's last name? Because I don't.
Isn't it Iscariot? I don't know. I'm not. Yeah, I'm a heretic.
It's like what Tori said, but not exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm not right. I only know it from Jesus Christ Superstar. To be honest, I haven't heard that for a very long time.
Let me pull it up and get a pronunciation on it. Hang on.
Thank you.
I'm a heretic. I know about Jesus from musicals.
Yeah. I snooze all through mass.
Yeah. I mean, I did occasionally go to Sunday school with my cousins. That's about it. Yeah.
Okay. It is a scare ut.
Okay.
Judas Iscariot.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I can cut and paste the phonetics in if you want.
Iscariot. I got it.
Iscariot? Okay, yep. Yeah.